Then I'm walking in Memphis.
Walking with my feet 10 feet
here we go. It's Thursday morning. You know what that means. It's time for Premier High School Sports. We got a packed show coming to you today. Greg White in the studio, Tony Reedy, Alon Howard missing in action. No idea where he is. We hope he's okay. Luke Crilly back in college, not going to be stopping by this week. You'll see him next week, but that doesn't matter. We still got great people here. We got to talk about Heritage and Woodland both getting blown out this week, as well as the New Haven Nailbiter, which was an a lot better game. Funny thing is, I was at both those games, Woodland and New Haven. I'll talk about that. And I also want to be transparent with our audience. Last week, we had an audience of 142 people. So I want to say thank you to everybody who partook in that and who hung out with us and listened in. Tell your friends. We hope to have more next week. Here we go. It's time for your scores and peak performers of week one in Northeast Indiana. Concordia beat Southside 41-14. Homestead 43-6 over Northrop. Adams Central 40-0 over Belmont. Bluffton won 24-20 against Northfield. Eastside blew out Heritage 44-0. South Adams slaughtered Winchester 40-0. Fremont beat Southern Wells 33-16 in a nail biter. Leo blanketed Woodland 36-0. Columbia City beat Hammond Gavitt 20-16. DeKalb beat Angola in a nail biter 41-39, a very impressive victory. Shout out to Coach Austin Miller. East Noble beat Plymouth 34-31. Warsaw beat Huntington North 52-13. South Bend Riley beat New Haven in overtime 28-27. Norwell beat Jay County 47-0. The Garrett Railroaders blanketed Prairie Heights 35-0. And West Noble beat Central Noble in the rivalry 19-0. Your peak performers, of course, Peyton Wall of Leo, 251 rushing yards, and a interception and 4 touchdowns. Tucker Steely of Carroll had a 95 interception return for a touchdown. Luke Good of Homestead had 266 passing yards and 4 touchdowns. Matt Firestein of Eastside had 120 rushing yards and 2 TDs against the mighty Heritage defense. And Jake Folk of Cherubusco had 278 rushing yards and 4 touchdowns. Benny and the Warriors debuted their season against the Leo Lions and lost by a miserable score of 36 to the Goose Egg. Zero, zip, nada. No points for the Woodland Warriors and very few yards from what I saw on Friday night. But it's not just the pitiful performance, dominating headlines coming from the Woodland Warriors. It's a lot of different things, and one of them being David Bischoff. So David is going to be suspended for at least 3 games. Once again, off-the-field issues coming into play. We know that the off-the-field issues have been very prevalent in the David Bischoff era at Woodland. He has been playing there for 3 years now, and he started 1 varsity game. How reliable is that? And the ironic thing is that the Blitz, no more than a couple hours before David got into trouble, put out an article on the top 5 game-changing players of the week. They had a kid from Snyder, a kid from Concordia, a kid from Northrop, I believe. But topping off the list at number 1 was David Bischoff to be the most game-changing player of the week. Wrote a real nice article about him. It's a good read. I would go read it without the foresight of knowing that he didn't play. And I can't say that I didn't call it. I put on Twitter about 5 months ago that David Bischoff is about as reliable as Josh Gordon. For those of you who don't know, Josh Gordon is an NFL wide receiver, hasn't played many NFL football games due to off-the-field issues, just like David. And I got into an argument with Ben on Twitter. He said that David was ready to go, there's no more problems, that's past him, and I didn't really believe it. But clearly, Benny and the rest of the Woodland crew did not heed my warning about David. I foresaw this happening, as many in the Woodland community did. But obviously, the players were relying on him. And I don't want you to look at this through the prism of a Warrior fan, or of Coach Haydock, or of the administration for that matter. I want you to look at this through the prism of his teammates. So much effort and energy and game planning goes into each and every week, and they prepared all summer, hoping and relying on David Bischoff being there for week one against the Leo Lions. And when you put all that planning together, I believe they had him starting at safety, at wide receiver, as well as many places on special teams such as punt return. And he's proved time and time again to be unreliable. I mean, can we even trust David to be there for the rest of the season? Who knows? Greg, you're with us. I want to know how you're doing, and I also want to know what you think of this whole Woodland Warriors situation.
I'm doing pretty good, man. Glad to be on the show, man. Just got back from college a couple hours ago, and I was in business class. There was something I've learned, though, from business class, is that external factors equals internal pressure. There were a lot of factors externally, both brought upon them naturally and because of how vocal these players are.
Talking about Woodland?
Yes. Okay. There were so many expectations and aspirations before the season started that the pressure was so immense before the first kickoff even happened.
Yeah, I agree.
And the Warriors did somewhat bring it upon themselves, man.
Yeah, they did.
Also, I know that wherever there's smoke, there's fire, man. Whether it's David being suspended or Coach Haydock walking off the field losing by 36-0,
yeah,
I think this organization has been set ablaze and is crippling.
I agree with you, Greg. Not only are they set ablaze, you know, you say where there's smoke, there's fire. There's not just smoke. There are flames billowing out the windows. I mean, this place is burning. They lost 36-0. As you well know, David suspended. Coach Haydock walks off the field after the third quarter. Ben throws 3-4 interceptions. They lose 36-0. They play Marion Local next week, which they'll most likely lose 50-0. This is a dumpster fire, Greg. I mean, I have no other way to put it, but an absolute dumpster fire. I mean, this is the Cleveland Browns before they had Baker Mayfield and Odell Beckham. They're going to start off 0-2, clearly. And then I think Heritage is going to give them a heck of a game. That's going to be a close one. I don't like the trajectory of this season for the Woodland Warriors. Me and Crilly, obviously, both completely wrong, but I did mention that it was kind of arbitrary, though. We said that Woodland would win. Clearly, we were mistaken, and we were also misinformed by the Woodland public and by the Woodland players. They seemed pretty confident that they would beat Leo. Not so fast. Peyton Wall absolutely destroyed them, had 4 touchdowns, picked off Ben Reedy, 251 yards. He was a monster. Woodland's defense was non-existent. You probably would have been better off just putting a chair on defense and letting Woodland or Leo play against that. I don't like what Woodland's going on, and I think that the start of this season is definitely going to hinder the Warriors for the rest of the season, but I don't want to backtrack too much yet. I know a lot of people have completely sold on the Warriors. I mean, if it's Wall Street, everybody's selling. The Woodland stock is a penny stock. I mean, it's on the pink sheets right now. They went from possibly a blue chip at the beginning of the season, and now they're a pink sheet. If anyone knows anything about the Wolf of Wall Street or the stock market, you know what I'm talking about. But I'm not selling yet. I still see some value in the Woodland Warriors season. What they need to do, they need to regroup, recuperate, don't put such high expectations on themselves. Like Greg said, external factors equals internal pressure. They need to just focus on them as a team and really focus on togetherness. And they need to come together. David Bischoff will be back for Bluffton. They're going to have three cupcake games in a row in Bluffton, Southern Wells, and Jay County. Then they'll get their butts kicked to LCC. And then probably get their butts kicked to South Adams. And then play against Adams Central. Could be a toss-up. I think they can win that game if they can band together right now. Greg, they got to use these first two games that they'll inevitably lose as a, you know, a motivation, as a fire. They need to use it as fuel. Light the fire under their butts, and they need to go out there and they need to play a lot harder because I think they were missing a lot of heart and a lot of effort on Friday night. And like I said, I found it utterly distasteful. But if they can get David back, if they can regroup, get Coach Haydock ready to go, I think that this season could not be a total loss. But that's a big if they can get this season back on track. The New Haven Bulldogs took on the South Bend Riley Wildcats on Friday night. Now, this is a game that I was not planning on going to. I was planning on just going to the Woodland game, but that game was so disgraceful that it hit the new mercy rule this year. Score over 35 points, the clock runs automatically. So that game got over a whole hour before New Haven's was over. Granted, New Haven's did go into overtime. So we left the Woodland game and we took our butts straight to the new. And we got to watch probably what, Greg? 8 minutes of the fourth quarter as well as overtime. And this is what New Haven wishes they heard. Jakar drove him down the field. They had a chance to kick a game-winning field goal with the game tied at 21. But no sirree, Bob. Greg, what happened?
Well, Jakar threw the ball to the track, and I was like, oh, dang, Judas Priest.
And then they had a chance at a field goal.
And, yeah.
Pressure was immense. Now, listen, Brendan Sowers, he's the field goal kicker from New Haven. He had a really good game leading up to that point. 3 for 3 on extra points. Was kicking very well with good persistence. And it was a high-pressure moment. I've been told that the ball was slightly tipped on the kick, almost like Cody Parkey, and it was missed right. We all thought it went in at first, but it was missed right. Regulation ends. The game goes to overtime. South Bend got the ball first. They scored, capitalized, kicked their extra point, made it, went up 28-21. New Haven scored. Time to go for two. Jakar Williams, at quarterback, sophomore. Wasn't even supposed to be in the game. We'll talk about that in a second. Hikes the football. Oh, he's got somebody wide open in the corner of the end zone, and it is on the track. Game over.
And then South Bend Riley just trashed New Haven's field, just stomped on it with their cleats, dove on it, beat it down, tore it to shreds.
Spit on it. Yeah, and South Bend Riley persisted to celebrate and stomped on New Haven's field. I think I even saw a player plant the South Bend flag at the middle of New Haven Field. I mean, this game could turn into a rivalry in the next couple years. But the thing about this game is, it was so much better than Woodlands. And I didn't expect it. I thought that New Haven was going to be beaten, I said, by at least 10 points to South Bend Riley. But they got within a point, and it never should have been that close. Because QB1, Mr. Jamar Twin, that's what they call him. They call him Twin. I thought it was Truth, but it's Twin because he's got a twin. And he had a phenomenal first quarter and a half of the game, had 14 points, had the Bulldogs looking good. Then he injures his shoulder, running a route as wide receiver. He's kind of a dual threat player. He plays quarterback. He can play wide receiver. He can do it all. And a heck of a defensive player. Hurt his shoulder. Now, reports out of the New Haven camp are that he's going to be out for at least the next 2 weeks. So he won't even be back until week 4, which means Jakar Williams, this is your moment. This is your chance to step up and prove to everybody that you are the phenom that we've all been raving about the past couple weeks. This is a kid that a lot of people are excited for, and I look forward to seeing what he does against what I hear is a weakened Mississinawa team. I think this team is not as good as recent years, so the Bulldogs could be in for a heck of a battle on Friday night. Greg, who do you think wins it, Mississinawa or New Haven?
I'm going for New Haven, man, all the way. Golden purple. All right.
Oh, wow. Emily, who you got? Mississinawa. She's taking Mississinawa on a shocking twist. What?
Unbelievable.
I'm also going to take Mississinawa. The Bulldogs are a little bit too young, and Mississinawa always has a formidable team, even if they are weakened this year. So I've got Tony Reedy with me here to talk about the old Heritage Patriots. Tony spoke very highly of the Heritage Patriots off air last week, was very excited to see what they could put together this year. I showed him a couple of our sources saying good things were coming out of the Heritage Patriot training camp, and it looks like that was an absolute fabrication, as their game against Eastside was a complete and utter debacle, as they lost 44-0 and could hardly manage to get a first down. Now, Tony, when I hear that this team is rebuilding and they're supposed to be close to 500 this year, and I look at such a pitiful performance starting week one, I definitely have room for concern. What do you think, Tony?
Well, man, I got to say, they just completely unmasked the Heritage Patriots for what they are, and that is just a below-average team right there, and it wasn't a pretty sight Friday night.
And the thing is this, Tony, it's not going to get any better for Heritage, because next week they are now going to face Norwell. And what did Norwell just do? Had a 47-0 win against the Jay County Patriots. Norwell, ironically, is going to go back-to-back weeks crushing two teams by the name of Patriots. And it's not going to be a pretty sight, I tell you what. Norwell is a much improved team, and that's what Heritage was supposed to be this year. But from what they've shown so far, it doesn't look like they will. And it looks right now that Woodland and Heritage could be actually a pretty good game, because we have two teams that could possibly be bottom feeders in this conference. What do you think about that, Tony? Woodland and Heritage.
Well, man, I got to say that both their offensive lines are pretty much non-existent, man. The quarterbacks have little time in the pocket, so it's either going to be a very exciting game with quarterbacks running rampant, or it's just going to be another snoozer, man.
I definitely agree with you there, but one thing I want to say is Woodland and Heritage is never a snooze fest, and that's because there is such history with this great rivalry. You know, back in our day, Tony, we had some great games for us against Heritage. You know, last time we played them, a 69-0 victory. But if you go back to our freshman year, we lost to them 27-7. So a pretty historic rivalry, and you know how much energy both sides bring. You know, last year, the chants coming from both Heritage's student section and Woodland's chanting that each other's quarterbacks suck. One is your brother. Anything that you took away from those chants last year and what you expect this year?
Oh, I expect the Heritage Patriots to be just as terrible as they were, at least towards my brother. That's what I mean. Ben is going to have to channel Kobe Bryant this next not this next game, but their game against Heritage. And he's going to have to shout out the haters. He's built for that.
Yes, I think the attacks are going to be ferocious, considering I think that Woodland will lose by 50 points this week, as well as Heritage is going to lose by 50 points this week. So both teams will be 0-2 and will probably have an average margin of loss of about 38, 40 points for both teams. So, yeah, we're going to look forward to that. Two bottom feeders that we did not expect this year.
It's time for the fan polls and questions. I'm just going to be transparent with everybody. We did not post the fan polls or any new questions this week. We got a couple that are being recycled from last week. Our Instagram account with a couple hundred followers was hacked, and we've been on the stick all week, essentially trying to unscrew us.
and we've been able to recover the count since then, but it's too late. We're already here. So we'll just go ahead and use our questions from last week that we didn't get to. Question number one, who will win the NE8? As of you who don't know, this is the New Haven Bulldogs Conference. Greg, who you got winning?
I hope DeKalb's going to win it.
DeKalb, and that's because of Coach Austin Miller, correct?
You darn skippy.
Thing about DeKalb, they play against the Garrett Railroaders this week. I got some inside information from one of the coaches of the Garrett Railroaders, and he says they're ready to go. They're gearing up. This is going to be a good season for the Railroaders. I got a sneaky feeling, but I think DeKalb will win that game. As for the conference, I'm handing that thing to who wins it almost routinely now, and that's the East Noble Knights. What will the impact of Joe Reedy have on the Woodland Warriors? Greg, what do you think the impact of Joe Reedy will have?
Well, it might be a medium impact. Like, not a big impact, but a good enough impact. You know, he might...
Not a minimal impact, not a huge impact, but somewhere in between.
Yeah, in between.
Okay. Obviously, in game one against Leo, there wasn't much of an impact at all. Yeah. And part of that is because David wasn't playing. All the focus for the Leo's defense was on Joe Reedy, which was quite unfair to Joe because... Let's just be frank. He's not a number one wide receiver right now, being a sophomore and being a basketball phenom. With that being said, I think that he should have a pretty good season and an even better season once David Bischoff returns. The last question, Greg. Of the teams we cover, I'm kind of construing this question how I want it, but of the teams we cover, who are some of the best players at their respective positions? Greg, go. Some of the best players at their respective positions.
Ben.
And why do you think Ben is one of the most dominant players in the area?
You know, I mean, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the ACAC, I believe that. I mean, yeah.
Yeah, I think most quarterbacks in the ACAC are throwing four interceptions and no touchdowns every game.
Come on.
That sounds really legit. I think David Bischoff is definitely going to be one once he returns, and if he can stay on the field, I'm going to stick with that. I said that in our first episode. I'm not going to run away from that. I deliver what I believe to be the truth, and I think the truth is David is one of the best receivers. But from what I saw at the New Haven game and what I heard, I think Jamar, a.k.a. Twin, is going to be a heck of an athlete, and I think he could be dominating headlines for a while. As for another EACS school such as Leo, Peyton Wall is a transcendent running back. I mean, it was against Woodland, and I mean, I think Woodland could probably make Emily look like a great running back with how awful they played Friday night. But with that being said, Peyton Wall looks to be the real deal, Greg. And I look forward to watching him the rest of the year, as well as you do. Once again, I just want to give a huge thank you to all the people who tune in on a week-to-week basis. We appreciate our 170 subscribers and the 142 people who tuned in last week. We hope you guys continue to tune in and hang out with us on every Thursday morning at 8 a.m. Greg?
You know what? Thanks to the Phoenix listeners once again. Maybe one listener. I'm sorry, man. But big shout out to the rest of the Fort Wayne area, whoever listens to this. You know, I mean, you know, spread this podcast out. We trying to get more listeners, you know, and viewers, you know.
Thank you for tuning in. We will see you back here next week, same time, 8 a.m.
You're damn right he is.